Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by my psychic and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy and my dog friend, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
Woof, woof.
This is the third in our series of All or Nothing watch-along specials. And what we're going to do here is walk through episode 3 of Amazon's All or Nothing series about Tottenham Hotspur. We suggest that if you want to watch the episode, watch that before you listen to this, because we are going to spoil all of that right now. If you've no intention of watching it, then it's fine. You can just allow us to talk you through it. And either way, hopefully this will be a useful piece of additional commentary to supplement your watching of the series. So straight away, we'll get into the episode. This one is called No More Mr. Nice Guy. The blurb says, Tottenham Hotspur have suffered their first loss under Jose Mourinho against his former club, Manchester United. The team aims to get back to winning ways in order to climb the Premier League table and finish in the Champions League places, while the club seeks to resolve the futures of several members of the squad. It's kind of unclear in terms of the time period that this is set from, but I think it might be from the day before the Manchester United game, because the players at the very beginning are climbing onto the plane and talking about an incident in the car, which we'll come to in a second. And it finishes on the 22nd of December. So I think it's set between the 4th of December and the 22nd. So approximately an 18-day period. The first episode was a six-month period. The second was a week. So this is slightly longer than the second, but obviously a lot shorter than the first. And this is a different episode, I would say. They focus on some different things. So diving straight into the scene by scene, the pre-intro scene, as I alluded to there, is the players getting onto the plane and Kyle Walker-Peters is unhappy because Delhi has crashed into his car. So there we are in episode 2 of our podcast, talking about how Delhi has an amazing appreciation of space and interpretation of space. Obviously not when he gets behind the wheel, because he's hit Walker-Peters' car and he's trying to blame Kyle Walker-Peters and Harry Winks for having their lights on. I mean, if it's dark, it seems sensible that they've got their lights on. Sessegnon is cackling to himself in the background and desperately trying not to take sides, despite both Delhi and Winks asking him to. It's very amusing. That is like a pre-intro scene of fun. I don't know any other reason why it fits in there. Bardi, what did you make of that little scene?
I mean, it's proper car crash television, isn't it? I thought it was quite nice. Once again, the human side, it shows the... I don't know. First of all, how can you crash your car? Delhi's not driving around in like a battered Fiat Cinquecento with no parking sensors or reverse cameras or anything else like that. So it's quite amazing how he's managed to do that. And I can understand why Kyle Walker-Peters is annoyed, because it doesn't matter how much money you're making. If someone smacks into your car, you're going to be annoyed.
It's admin, right? Car crashes are really... even if everyone's safe and it's fine, they're really annoying because it's admin. Hassle to sort out.
You have your personal assistant deal with it. You have your club liaison officer deal with it for you. I don't think he's that pissed off. I think he's less pissed off than someone who's not a millionaire would be.
Audi would just give him another car. I'm pretty sure they all seem to be driving Audis in this.
I do side with Delhi a little bit. I've got to disagree with, if you're sat there in your car and you've got your like full beam on or whatever, you're making things difficult to see. I do feel for him a little bit there.
I would need to see the footage of the incident to be able to make a clear decision on who was right or wrong in this.
I'll do a green screen.
My instinct, as you might have guessed, is very much to defend Kyle Walker-Peters. That's my instinct in life more generally.
Yeah, fair play.
So we start the episode proper with Mourinho arriving at the training ground the morning after the defeat to Man United. So they've not showed any footage from this game up until this point. It's quite interesting. It starts pre-United. Ends pre-United in the previous episode, starts post-United here, and then we see clips of the 2-1 defeat, and we see post-match, and there's a meeting going on in the tactics room where Mourinho says we have very bad feelings in relation to the game yesterday. And he once again talks up this idea of the players being good guys, and he says, you were hiding, the attitude was not good enough. And what's really fascinating about this clip is that Kane then chips in. So, I mean, we've heard before talk of Kane being a bit of a teacher's pet. He jumps in and wants to back up Mourinho's point. And he said that it's been happening all season, that some players are waiting for others to do things for them. And he said it's unacceptable. Mourinho goes on to say that we need to win 50-50s, we need to win duels, second balls, you need to be a bastard. What do you think, Nathan?
I'm really frustrated by this bit because Kane is saying something really interesting, but because of the editing, you don't know if he's talking about on the ball, off the ball, you don't know if he's, you know, and I really, because I'm still desperate to get an idea of what went wrong at the beginning of last season, and I thought there might have been some insight there, but again, because it's chopping back and forth, it gives you the impression that he's just saying it in response to what Mourinho was saying, but there's just no way of knowing. And again, like I talked about in the previous episode, it's so results focused, because I thought we played well against United. I thought we had a good performance, a good game. Yeah. We were unlucky, but the narrative is we were too nice.
Yeah, I found that odd, that the questioning of the attitude, and I agree, we played well in that game. But it is interesting that Kane agrees with Mourinho's assessment in some respects, that he kind of felt that players were hiding too and not taking responsibility. It seemed like Kane was saying something about shirking responsibility, not fulfilling all of their duties. That was the implication I took from it. Kane was so polite with the way he kind of butted in and then just checked whether it was okay for him to join in. Mourinho was like, yes, please go ahead. It's even better for me if you say my points for me, kind of thing. He was only too happy for Kane to join in. Then we see a clip of Heung-min Son saying that they need to be bad guys to win. So clearly he's believing everything he's been told so far from Mourinho. And Mourinho's talking then about wanting to transform the mentality of the players. He talks, interestingly, about emotional balance. He said we need a solid team, solid mentality, united group. So it's all, again, about mentality. And again, I think we all disagree that there was a problem with the mentality per se, in some respects. Nathan?
I think it's fair to say there was a mentality problem that season. Something had obviously gone wrong and fallen apart, and the mentality had changed that season. But there's a nuance there in that, like, we were obviously a strong, confident, aggressive bunch, you know, 6 months prior, and then things went mentally wrong. And I just feel like there's just a slight misplacement of the focus, both from, like, the players and Mourinho specifically, but also even more so from the show that's saying that, like, we're a historically weak, nice team, and that's just not true, is it?
Yeah, you put it far better than I could, buddy.
I mean, he does like to throw the mentality and the softness in there, but I do think there is an issue with the United group, because even if you just look around when they do the big team shots, you see Danny Rose, who there is definitely being ostracised. You've got Wanyama there, who never kicks a football. You've got Ericsson and the other guys who they've mentioned in episode one about whose contracts are expiring. So I think there is definitely a thing there around the group not being united. And I think that is a challenge to get them all working together. Personally, I would like to have seen a little bit more from the Man United defeats, especially any halftime talks or something like that. I thought they did kind of skip it, especially when, if you give the magnitude of, at the time, Sky were building this up as Mourinho comes home. I thought we would have spent a little bit more time at Old Trafford. than we did. Well, we didn't spend any time there. They showed the goals and then went straight back to Spurs.
Yeah, it really zipped through it. I guess there was either nothing of particular interest to the narrative of the show, or maybe it was just really dull. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. The narrator, Tom Hardy, then says that we need to win the three games before Christmas. The team are then out on the pitch and they're doing a training session that Mourinho is absolutely adamant that he created himself. And that if they've ever done this before, it's essentially been plagiarised by their coaches. Nathan, what did you think of that?
My understanding from having spoken to quite a few coaches is that that's completely fair and reasonable for him to claim copyright over. That a lot of people for a long time have sold a lot of Mourinho's training session work. So he's justified, apparently, there.
That's interesting. So this is a particularly competitive training exercise, which it said is designed to create unity. And Mourinho is refereeing it and having so much fun doing so. It's actually really, really fun to watch this. The players are screaming their heads off. They're loving it. The winners are sort of bundling the losers. It's really good to watch. Buddy, what did you make of that?
Yeah, I think I meant to ask you this perhaps in episode two, but there seems to be a lot of youth players involved in the training. Is that something Mourinho has done or Pochettino is doing the same? Because Troy Parrott, he's looked big in any clips from Millwall I've seen, but Troy Parrott stands alongside them as a boy, but he looks like a man. So is it quite common for that many youth players to take part with the first team?
I think so. I think that's not uncommon. Most managers will pick a few youth players who will step up to sort of make up the numbers in first team training. There's lots of shots of Alfie Whiteman and Brandon Austin throughout this documentary, both of whom have been with the first team squad for some time, but have only made the bench until this point. So they're not well-known players, but Whiteman appears pretty frequently in all the team meeting sections. So yeah, absolutely. I think the youth players are probably there to largely make up the numbers. Nathan, what did you make of the training session?
It was really sweet to see sort of the camaraderie. Yeah. Lots of people laughing and hugging and joking. There is a bit where, like, the pink team win and they're all celebrating and then Mourinho, like, runs over to join in the celebrations and gets the hard blank and then he has to do, like, an awkward shuffle away. But whatever, that's harsh of me to focus in on. It was a really positive sequence. And obviously what the players desperately needed at the time was some positivity.
Absolutely. I think his judgment there was absolutely spot on in terms of giving them that session after a defeat and sort of making them buoyant and bringing them together again. You can definitely see there's a sort of sense of camaraderie in the group there. And Mourinho's just absolutely loving it. He's like probably thinking, I'm a genius. Look at what I've done. I've brought them back to 10 out of 10 passion in a matter of hours with the session that I developed myself. So he's loving life as well. Then we see Jason Burtz from The Telegraph again. He is so prevalent in this episode, but the documentary more generally. I don't know why that is the case, but fine. I've got nothing against Jason Burtz. He's talks very sensibly. This time he's talking about a new manager bounce and the scale of the task at hand for Mourinho. And then we zoom back into the canteen and the players seem to be pulling crackers together, Christmas crackers. And the voiceover talks about the contract situations, particularly of Ericsson. Ericsson tells a terrible cracker joke about dogs and says, looks at Kane and probably Vertonghen and says, come on, dog friends, which I really, really thought was funny. I really like Ericsson in this moment. Barney, what did you make of that scene?
As someone who's grown up with a non-native speaker and someone who married someone whose first language is in English, Christmas cracker jokes are always complicated around people who, when English isn't their first language. Like, why can't you teach? The joke was, why can't you teach a dog to dance? Because they have two left feet. And you just saw it. It just didn't land.
It didn't land. No, Vertonghen's face. He went, two left feet. And then I think he kind of cottoned on. Yeah, because dogs have 4 feet, so of course. But it took him a minute. It was funny. Nathan, what did you make of it?
It's such like a harsh clip for Ericsson because he's obviously like a cold and closed off person, and he doesn't get much screen time. And then he gets this bit where like he's playing the role of performing out to the bad joke. He's not being a bad joke teller. He's like, he's doing what you're meant to do. And I just think it's so harsh on him to like, that's his screen time.
I disagree. I thought he came off really well in this section.
Yeah?
I found him really funny and dry to watch. Like, he's, the way he told the joke was funny. And then the come on dog friends really made me laugh. I really enjoyed Ericsson a lot in this moment. Okay. It was good. It was good Ericsson content for me. That, as well as the sort of frowning meme, have been two of my favourite moments of a documentary so far, to be fair. We then see this sort of montage of Ericsson's assists and goals with narration about his influence and the fact that he wants to leave. And Jason Burt is back once again to say that his motivation will be impacted by his contract situation and you know, his impending transfer, we feel, at this point. Then you see Mourinho and Levy having another conversation. So yet again, we're seeing them talk football matters, which is interesting. Mourinho is telling Levy that Ericsson moves the ball better. I think he's implying that he moves the ball better than anyone else in the team, but that he's missing the extra push, the real push. And he says the extra desire. And Levy says the problem we have with Christian is that none of us know what the real truth is. His agent controls everything and there's no dialogue between the club and his agent at all. So this is new. This is really interesting. Ericsson obviously just he's employed his agent for a reason, and he will allow his agent to manage his business affairs, which is completely his prerogative, and many footballers will do this. But it does create this kind of awkward tension for him around his relationship with the manager and with the club. Which I don't think he's managing too badly, in fairness. Like, he seems to still be getting on really well with everyone, and he seems like a complete professional. It's just that there's a feeling that his intensity and motivation has dried up somewhat. Nathan, what do you make of that whole section?
I think this bit is slightly telling about the Ericsson situation, in that Mourinho and Levy are both trying to, like, push the case on one another. Huh. So Levy is saying, like, as the manager, could you please persuade the player to stay? And Mourinho is saying, as the chairman, can you please tell me which players I will have in a month's time? And they're both saying, no, you deal with it. You because I've tried, so now it's your turn.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I hadn't thought of it that way at all. Ericsson then goes on to speak about the rumours himself, and he mentions that he's spoken about as an object, which is quite insightful, I think. And he says that football is one of the only things where people write about football with no consequences. So they can write whatever they like and there's no consequences. What do you think of that, Nathan?
I really, really liked this bit, because this is essentially the only sort of human bit of Ericsson we're really seeing. Like, again, he's a super closed off person, more than anyone else, like more than Levy, more than even Pochettino and everything else. He's the Iceman. And there's lots of, like, screen time, not in this documentary, but generally lots of interviews with Ericsson where he just is, it's one word answers, and it's completely vacant. And finally, after he's already left the club, we're getting to see just a little bit of sort of, you know, footballers are seen as objects, and he's completely right. I was just, unlike with the Pochettino bit, I'm like, oh God, I can't wait. I hope this is over. This is making me sad. It was really sweet to see some of these moments from Ericsson, who's a player I have just so much, an immense, immense fondness for. It's nice to sort of know him a little bit more as a human.
Yeah, and there's no sort of bitterness there towards the club at all. He comes across, and I think we'll probably talk about this more into more detail later, because there's specific sections about it. But he comes across as he's just moving on with his life, and that is it doesn't seem like there's any problem on either side. It's just that he's ready to have a change, and that's fine. And he handles himself really well, I think. And Bardi, what did you make of the Ericsson section here?
There's also quite a fair bit of hand washing here by Daniel Levy by saying it's the agent's fault and that they've tried. So he's also trying to cover his tracks there. I mean, it was very nice and very sweet to see that side of Ericsson. And once again, we're finding out a little bit more about these players. And I think Ericsson is bang on with how people can write about football with no consequences, that people can write anything and And it turns into a, we found ourselves on even on this podcast, we say something and then someone writes something about what we've said, and then that's news. Like how is that news? So yeah, it does. I definitely think I'm going to start paying a little bit more attention to what I say when it comes to these players, and just be perhaps a bit more understanding. Not that I don't think Ericsson downloads the extra inch, but I think maybe as just being a better human being, we need to be a bit more compassionate.
Mm, that's a really good point. Very sensible. So the next part is pre Burnley on the 7th of December, a home match. So you see a montage of fans and players arriving at the stadium. We see some footage from inside the stadium. We get the dressing room pre-game with Vertonghen saying quick transitions randomly, but seems to just be sort of thrown out there. Mourinho asking Kane who's going to do the sort of pre-match team talk. And on this occasion, it ends up being Mourinho. So he says, yes, fight, yes, second balls, yes, pressing, yes, intensity. But your most important thing is your confidence to play. So once again, it's confidence and it's believing in themselves. Bardi, what did you make of that part?
I think you skipped over a big important part in this dressing room is Mourinho putting stickers on a board of Burnley playing 4-4-2. It's just like... Just laying it out. Who makes these stickers? Because they had the name
Ben Mee.
Ben Mee, and he was putting them out like, no shit, we're gonna play 4-4-2. I just like, who's making all these stickers? And throughout the City one, you had Guardiola banging on a whiteboard and drawing circles in the half space. In this one, you've just got Mourinho putting stickers of the opposition on a board. I just thought it was quite nice to see, actually, but quite funny. Very, very old-fashioned.
I couldn't quite work out what Mourinho was saying in the pre-match talk about the fact they had a day off. He said something like, you've got a meal tonight and a day off tomorrow. Is that motivation enough? Was he saying... if you win, you can go out and have a few drinks knowing you're off tomorrow? Or was he offering them a day off if they won?
I think it was a day off if they won. They probably had a day off booked. Maybe we saw them pulling crackers already, so maybe it was their Christmas dinner. So he was going to give them the day off. Yeah,
he's incentivizing them to go out and get the win.
Yeah, because they can't really do it any closer to Christmas because we've got games Boxing Day. We've got games 22nd, 26th or 27th. So I guess they have their Christmas dinner early.
That's true. And by God, did it work? Because Harry Kane scores an early absolute banger. Lucas then gets one at the back post. We see Son scoring the goal of the season, which, of course, to me, the highlight of that was Walker Peters' lovely smile from the touchline in aberration of Son's goal. At halftime, we see Mourinho telling the players that the game is not over. He reminds them that Burnley are fighting. He says that the clean sheet should be a collective objective. And he's very firm on that. He's desperate for them to... Yeah, absolutely. We've seen this before from Mourinho at halftime, sort of reinforcing the importance of not letting up and actually making sure that you continue to match the intensity of the other side. But this time it was very specific with that collective objective. Kane scores a lovely fourth and Sissoko makes it five. Post-match, Mourinho is being interviewed and he says that we're more aggressive and we pressed better. The Sissoko fifth goal leads to the Sissoko sing song in the changing room post match. We've seen before that the players do love singing the Moussa Sissoko song, and we know from Sacramento's scouting mission that Sissoko is a big influence in the dressing room. Fuck. So it's no surprise to see the players once again singing his song in the changing room, and it's nice. It's really nice to see that. Son, naturally, is getting lots of attention for his goal. He does one of his fun handshakes with Tanganga. He has a big hug with Harry Kane. And then Son is being interviewed post-match by one of the TV channels, I presume. And Mourinho interrupts the interview and asks if he's man of the match. And this all leads on to a section about the Korean support for Son. So firstly, we see a clip of the Korean commentary for Son's goal, which weirdly seemed to be in slow motion or certainly slowed down slightly. I couldn't work out the logic behind that. But then we see a shot of a Korean guy stood outside the training ground or near to the training ground in with a Son shirt, waving at every car as they go past. Not player cars, just And he describes how he wants people to sort of realise how friendly Korean people are because he wants to make a good impression on Son Heung-min. And he says every Korean person likes Son. He kind of explains how popular he is. And then there's a section on Son's fame. I don't know if you agreed, but I found that he looked almost quite sheepish and embarrassed about the whole thing. And he sort of talks about how it gives him good energy when people come to the UK to watch him play, come from Korea to the UK to watch him play. But that back home, this is just the normal thing for him. And then there's this huge group of Korean fans turning up to a training ground, mobbing him and his signing shirts and having photos with them. What did you make of all of this, Nathan? Is there a particular point that we're to take from this, other than Son just being the nicest, most modest man?
No, it's mainly that. It's so sweet, and he's so humble, and there's just, you know, thousands of adoring fans travelling across the globe to, you know, worship at his feet, and he's just this sweet, charming, funny, happy guy. I don't know. I really love this bit. It's so sweet.
That fan on the street, I mean, that's just amazing. It's just waving at like anybody. It's like, come on.
The commitment brilliant. Levels were there, weren't they?
Yeah, I mean, but someone needs to have a word with Son. If it was my office or my place of work and someone was cutting their toenails over a bin, I'd be having a word. Come on, man. That's disgusting.
It was, to be fair, it was his fingernails. It was his fingernails. Was
it, okay. It was. Yeah. Well, still, it's pretty nasty, but yeah, it's not good.
Do it at home, Sonny.
Yeah, it was the physio that hugged him. The physio should be having a word saying, do it at home or go to a nail salon or something, get it done properly.
Yeah. Then we have another clip of Daniel Levy and Jose Mourinho talking about football. It's like it's a constant daily occurrence. The lads having a catch-up over their breakfast. And Levy is really excited about what an incredible goal Son scored. And he says to Mourinho, it was good to win in style, which I thought was very telling. Nathan, how did you feel about that?
Yeah, this was really, really interesting to see the ways in which Levy is hands-on. And there's this conversation. Jose's eating, so he's got like a half excuse kind of thing. But Levy is obviously trying to get Mourinho to open up so they can have a back and forth about tactical decisions and such. And he's saying, yeah, it was a really good game. And Mourinho says, yes. And he says, yeah, it was exciting. Really great goal from Sonny. It was an incredible goal, wasn't it? And Mourinho says, yes. And he says, you know, really good to win in style. And Mourinho says, yeah. And he's like, he's trying to get like, he doesn't want to be like, I'm your boss. This is how you must do things. I've been, you know, he's trying to make it a casual conversation, two blokes at the breakfast bar chatting football, but also I am your boss and you must do things this way.
I think so, and I just forgot to mention with Son, I got distracted by his nail habits. I think it's also a little reminder that we have this kind of, he's not, perhaps not global, but this national superstar. And I think it was probably, we're going to see a lot of Son as well, because this is probably going to be marketed out to the Korean public as well. So I think that's why Son is getting a lot of airtime. But we do think of Kane and Dele as being like our stars, but we do have we have this icon in our team as well. So I think it's nice to get just that reminder of just how big Son is. And maybe in terms of scale and everything else, Son is perhaps our biggest box office player.
He's so marketable as well. I mean, not only is he really handsome, but he's just utterly lovable. I mean, there's not a bad bone in the man's body. He's really smiley. He's really professional. He's really dedicated. He scores goals. He gets assists. Yeah. He's just perfect. He's the perfect.
There's a bad bone
player.
In Andre Gomez's, though. And we're going to get into Rudiger's chest bone as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, good point. I mean, he's definitely. There is a trigger there, isn't there? There's a trigger there.
A little.
Yeah, I was wrong to say there's not a single bad bone. There is definitely a bad bone in his body. So it's not clear whether it's the same Mourinho and Levy meeting, chit-chat, whatever, but the way it's shot makes it seem like it is. But anyway, Eriksen comes over to shake hands with them both, which, again, I think talks to Eriksen's professionalism and the fact that he is still even despite this huge potential contract dispute where his agent's not communicating with the club, he is behaving impeccably. He goes and says good morning to both his boss, the coach, Mourinho, and his mega boss, Daniel Levy. He shakes hands. It's just a nice moment there. And it just shows that despite everything going on, he behaves well and isn't being disruptive. He talks about how Tottenham's been his home, he's loved it, and he wants to try something new. And it's done in a way that makes you feel absolutely no malice for Eriksen or sort of resentment of him leaving. It's all just very calmly played, I think. This is where the bit that Nathan referred to earlier happens, where Levy says, you know, you think there's definitely no way to turn him, and Mourinho begrudgingly says, I can try once more, to try and convince Eriksen to stay. Nathan.
Yeah, again, it's that style of micromanagement where he's not saying, Jose, I need you to do this. Mm. This is an instruction I'm giving you. He's trying to make it this sort of casual chit chat. It's like, oh yeah, wouldn't it, like with a wink and a nudge, oh, wouldn't it be good if someone, you know, just casually, just a couple of lads having a chat about football, wouldn't it be good if someone maybe could have a word in Eriksen's ear? Maybe that could be you, Jose. Maybe you could be someone who could do that. Oh, are you volunteering? Are you volunteering to do that? Oh, that's good of you. That's nice of you to put yourself forward to do that.
Do you know what? Maybe he should take the Jose Mourinho approach to sort of psychological warfare here and just say to him, speak to Eriksen, convince him. Speak to Eriksen, convince him. Speak to Eriksen, convince him. Convince Eriksen to stay. Make him stay. Make him stay. Make him stay. That would probably work. Repetition seems to work. Be confident in making him stay.
Yeah.
But what I don't get is I could try once more, and his trying once more is chucking him on with 7 minutes to go to Wolves away. That's not trying. But it is all very like, do you think there's no way to turn him? It is all very kind of Star Wars of the Emperor.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? It very much is.
I'll try once more.
But like Nathan says, not presented that way by Levy at all. There's no sort of... Levy doesn't come across as overtly Machiavellian here, even though he probably is being that way.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So then we have a section about the Toby Alderweireld and Jan Vertonghen centre-back pairing. I think it's mainly Vertonghen doing the talking in this part, and he speaks about how they've been friends from when one was 16, the other was 17. They know one another's families, and I think it's Vertonghen that says, I've played more games with him than without him, which is actually quite remarkable across a long career like both of theirs have been. And they just seem to get on really well as friends, as people, but also we know they play brilliantly together because we've seen it for many years. Nathan, was there any surprises here for you?
So this is something that's been talked about amongst fans and in the press a bit before as well. And I've always been a little dubious about how real it is, but it was very much confirmed here that it's
real. Yeah, oh yeah, it's real.
Super, super real. And it's really sweet. It's really nice. I like this a lot. It's clearly been instructional in both these players being at this club in both directions. You know, Toby joining in the first place, Vertonghen sticking around, all that kind of stuff. It's really nice that, you know, this is a hell of a pair of centre-backs. Mm. You know, two of the very best in the world, and they happen to be mates at our club together. It's really, it's great.
Well, the other thing that's really interesting about the pair of them is that they just seem to sort of, what's the word? They seem to appreciate longevity and the right feeling of belonging more than finances. I mean, Alderweireld was underpaid for so many years at Spurs. I mean, all that time he was in a sort of contract dispute with us, I think he was getting paid 40k, something crazy like that. When he was worth, his market value would have been, God, four times that, maybe? Yeah. If he'd gone to Man City, five times that, potentially. But he was just in the right place for him.
I think it's really interesting that in modern football, partnerships have kind of died. You don't get your striker partnerships. You don't get your full-back winger partnerships. Maybe you still get your central midfield partnerships a fair bit, but it's really the centre-back partnership is the only really lasting one. And it's interesting to see the sort of the personal relationship side of that, that you would be able to develop this sort of this telepathy built on your friendship with your centre-back partner. I really like it's sort of, you know, crime-solving Ninja Turtles, you know, all that kind of nonsense. It's very cute.
Jan's definitely Michelangelo.
I also like the way Vertonghen. I mean, you've got if you look at the Ajax, the trio from Ajax, Eriksen, Vertonghen, and Alderweireld. It's quite clear to all of us that Vertonghen is the one approaching the end of his career compared to the other two. And I just like the way Vertonghen says he's still got loads to offer, and he's not going to go somewhere just to see out his days. And I think that's kind of been reflected in where he's ended up at Benfica, that he still feels that he can play at a Champions League level, and it doesn't work for us, but you know, he's come out of this with a lot of credit, and the same with Eriksen, and they've both shown themselves, all three of them, shown themselves to be very articulate, very calm, very reasonable men. And if you flash back to like the Sherwood days, there was the rumour going around that Vertonghen wasn't quite like that, but it's kind of been shown to be that was the wrong interpretation to make, and once again highlights the danger of takes from like 5 second clips off TV.
Tim Sherwood also said he's a rubbish defender who can't sort his feet out. So, you know.
Yeah.
So our friend Jason Burt is back once again giving his opinion about how the club might manage that situation.
He doesn't even cover Spurs that much anymore. He used to be like an on-the-beat reporter, and now he's weird. It's weird.
It's very odd. I mean, he must have had a contact in the production team or something. I don't know. Or someone said, you should speak to Jason Burt. He's really good. I don't know. He's got a nice beard, though. Vertonghen talks about how him and Toby have been talking literally every day about their future for some time, so it's an ongoing conversation. We see Jan doing quite an intense workout on the bike, and then you get this sort of very bizarre section where Mourinho is talking with his staff about fashion, and he kind of pulls up his trousers so awkwardly high to show how one of the coaching staff, Ricky, used to wear his trousers as a teenager. And when he does that, it creates a really unpleasant bulge in his trousers, which I did not enjoy seeing at all. I really did not need to see that at all.
I thought that bit was funny.
Yeah, I did. The conversation started off, they were talking about socks. Somebody wears some
woolen
strange
socks.
Yeah, and it did. Yeah, I didn't need to see that bulge. Mourinho's body, as he gets older, seems to be getting like weird bulges in different places. But yeah, I didn't need to see that one.
I mean, they obviously get on really well. They've known each other for an awful long time, which is nice that they're continuing to work together. It's a kind of bit like Poch with some of his coaching staff in a way. There's this sort of friendship that's developed over the years, and now they trust one another so much that they'll continue working together for a while. Nathan, what did you think of it?
Is Ricky the one who's now been replaced by Ledley King? So he was previous analyst. Okay, that's interesting.
Obviously not that good of friends. Just binned him off.
Well, maybe we'll find out more about the narrative. Maybe this was the moment, the beginning of the end of their friendship. He's like, how dare you say that I wear my trousers that high? I would never do such a thing. Mourinho is demanding, pull a photo out, show them. Look at show them how you used to wear your trousers. It was so weird, so odd. So then we go to pre-match Wolves, and we're told how many points they were behind and how they're catching Chelsea now. Mourinho puts a huge emphasis on the Wolves and the Chelsea matches. Pre-game, we see lots of crowd shots from Wolves, followed by some footage of the match, interspersed with Mourinho describing how Wolves play. So this was presented in a slightly different way to some of the previous game. You've got Mourinho talking mixed in with footage from the game. He's talking, interestingly, about Doherty being aggressive, which now obviously takes on a whole new meaning now that we've signed Doherty. So that was nice to see. He talks about Adama Traore. He talks about Johnny Castro, their left wing back, also being aggressive. So Traore scores an equaliser. I don't think there's a huge amount to say about this section. That Mourinho says this is a game that demands a lot, demands that aggression, demands the attitude, demands the ambition. We have to win. It's 1-1 in 86 minutes. Wolves have a free kick and Gazzaniga makes a save. Spurs survive and then Eriksen is sent on for Lucas. Now, I don't remember this being sort of a huge Eriksen narrative at the time, but it's certainly given that effect here, where Eriksen is sent on to rescue the game. He takes a corner and Vertonghen plants a header in. What did you make of that, Vardy?
There was a bit of narrative because it was like, look, Pochettino had been making him take near post corners all his life, and then
Mourinho
comes along and he lobs onto the back post and we score. So that was the main narrative that from that Eriksen appearance.
You're absolutely right. Then there's this shot from inside Vertonghen's car, which is different. We've not seen anything sort of out on the streets at this point. He's talking about the conditions of the game, how it was raining. He talks about his header and he's quite humble here. He just says, I closed my eyes. And he said that he was having a hard time in the match. And it's good that he scored because people will now just remember the goal. So again, very humble, but kind of the implication being that he's not at the peak of his powers anymore. Nathan, what did you think of that?
This again, him there, he's speaking to... Once again, I'll point out the incredibly results-driven narrative going on here because, once again, I thought the Wolves game was a really poor performance. And I got, again, a hell of a lot of pushback on my perception of that Wolves game. But nonetheless, I can't help but observe that.
Sure.
There's also games in every kind of professional's career where they realise perhaps they're not quite at it anymore at the top level. Neville talks about that West Brom game, I think, where he got absolutely destroyed. And perhaps this was Vertonghen's kind of point there, where he realised he's definitely never going to be able to play left back at a high level anymore, because Traore gave him an absolute torrid time, and maybe that sealed his fate. Even though he did score the winner, that sealed his kind of time at Tottenham, which is, yeah, maybe that was it.
Yeah. So the reason he was in his car is because he's off to deliver or help deliver supplies to the North Enfield Food Bank. And he said that he's been going there for 5 or 6 years and he's built up some connections over those years. He seems to get on really well with the staff there. They all value him turning up and helping out. And there's one guy that's clearly a big Spurs fan. And he's like thanking Vertonghen for the header against Wolves, which is nice. And I guess that's... that must be really common for these players when they do anything in the local community, that they get met with fans of the club who kind of appreciate their contribution. So nice scene. Again, it felt a little kind of PR heavy, but I'm happy enough to see it. It's all good. And then we have the narrator once again talking about the contract extension or situation rather. Jan talks about his age and wanting security in life. He's talking about how he likes to plan ahead. And he mentions that his daughter loves school and he's not going to tell her at this point whether there's a possibility of moving because he wouldn't want to cause her any upset. And then we find out that Toby Alderweireld has signed his contract. He's got his wife and or partner and his child in to come in and sign the contract. I don't think Mourinho was there. I don't think Levy was there, but there were some club representatives there for the signing. And he has a photo shoot as well. And he says, do I see myself playing for another club? Not really. He looks genuinely, absolutely thrilled to be signing the contract. And then there's a family photo in front of the Christmas tree. And it's all very nice and wholesome. And like Vertonghen, Alderweireld comes across really well, if just a little bit more reserved and shy, perhaps. He's kind of just enjoying family time. But it's nice that his family are also embedded within the club, I guess. Then we have Son joking with Alderweireld that he's always late. I presume there's a joke then where Jan says the money's in the pocket. I presume the whole point of that is that he's going to get fined for being late for the training session. Is that right?
No. What he's saying is that he's got his contract. He's got 5 years. He's got 20 million in the bank.
Yes.
Now he can behave exactly as he pleases and it's irrelevant. It's a good
yeah,
line.
Yeah. You're totally right. I completely misinterpreted. I assumed what they were saying was you're late for training and you've bought your money to pay your fine.
Yeah, that's what I thought as well. Because I think they give the money to charity, don't they?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. But Nathan's spot on there. Nathan's absolutely spot on.
No, but that's Nathan being really cynical. Maybe.
Imagine.
Of Vertonghen being cynical, perhaps.
Yeah.
So Mourinho is then asked the question by Dan Kilpatrick. Nice to see Dan Kilpatrick get a moment in the sun.
It's been quite nice to see all the beat journalists get their faces on TV. Alistair Gold as well. They've all put their faces there.
Yeah, that's been cool. That's been really cool. So Dan asks Mourinho about Vertonghen's contract situation, and Mourinho explains that everyone has to want it. The club, the player, the family, the agent. And if one element of that doesn't want to sign a contract, then it won't happen. Then we have Vertonghen once again talking about leaving. He says, I don't want to think about it. Spurs is in my heart and the players are in my heart. So you kind of once again getting this impression of his long-term commitment to Spurs over his peak years. Then we have pre-Chelsea, and the narration says that it's Mourinho's biggest test yet. And you have Mourinho talking to Son about the pressing that they'll try and implement on the training pitch. And I think what they were going through there was pressing triggers. It wasn't completely clear because we saw once again a snippet of that section. And then we see Son doing some shooting practice. So straight away, your mind's going, I mean, if you didn't know the outcome of the game, your mind's going, okay, Son's going to be a big player in this game. Is he going to score the winning goal? Narrator voice, no, he's not. Eriksen asks Mourinho if Lampard is a good guy as they're watching it, Lampard's on Sky Sports News. And Mourinho says that he was the best professional footballer he's ever seen, which I don't think is a huge surprise to anyone who knows anything about Lampard, because he was always viewed as an absolute model pro and he's seen generally as a really good guy, Lampard. Mourinho's asked about the narrative of him against his old club, and he kind of makes his big play of saying, no, I'm 100% Tottenham. There is no me against them. It's just another match kind of thing. And then he's asked specifically whether he'll go out for a drink with Lampard after the game. And he says there'll be a big hug before and a big hug after, and says, you know, I'll always be grateful for him for what he did for me when I was at Chelsea. I will always love the guy, but I hope he loses Sunday. Then there's like this section where there's a bunch of fans talking about Mourinho, and some are kind of implying that they didn't like him at first because of his Chelsea connections or the way he was perceived, but they're slowly warming to him. What do you think of that, Bardi?
I quite liked it. It was a nice cross section of fans. Sometimes when you end up doing sound bites outside the stadium or on the way to the stadium, you get the same people that all look the same. So it was nice to get kind of a range of answers from a different kind of a bit of diversity. You know, I like that. Also thought the comments of Frank Lampard could be taken two ways. It was Eriksen that was asking, and it was Mourinho saying the best professional, super focused, always giving 100%. And that could also be a kind of a nod to Dele as well, that this is the kind of professional that you need to emulate, the way he trains and the way he prepares.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of that at all, but it's absolutely, absolutely possible. I mean, it's quite a public forum for him to sort of big up Lampard there. We see the changing room pre-match, and Mourinho once again talks about having big balls. I mean, Jose, it's 2020, mate. We don't need to constantly go on about players needing to have big balls, testicular fortitude, whatever.
Balls, if you've got big balls, please go and see your GP.
Yeah, consult medical advice.
Absolutely. Kane, with an absolute classic Harry Kane line, which is, it's a fucking London derby, so let's fucking win this game. And Nathan is so pumped from that that he will run through walls.
Like every time, I'm out of my seat, I'm ready to go to war.
Let's to be fair, that did get me going a little bit.
There you go.
We need to get some extra inch t-shirts with Harry Kane quotes on it. It's a fucking London derby. Let's fucking win this game.
Hashtag passion.
They got to print some cards at Spurs, like with inspirational quotes from Harry Kane, just F and loads of stars.
Absolutely. So we get footage of the game, Willian scoring the absolute horror show of Gaz and Iga. Oh, God, every time I see that incident, it looks so much worse than I initially remembered it being. I remember at the time not realising quite how bad it was, and then, nightmare, absolute nightmare. Willian scores a penalty, it's 2-0 at half-time, and Delhi is absolutely livid, like throwing a bottle of water onto the floor as he walks into the changing room. To which Mourinho says quickly, I mean, it's, I don't know how soon Mourinho walked into the changing room, but it seems as though very quickly he says, you cope with the fucking pressure. That's the first thing you need to do, is you need to be mentally able to cope with the pressure. And he tells them to face up to the fact that they're 2-0 down. And he says, you believe you're not going to lose. You even believe you can win. Let's press them high now. And he makes the change, which is Eriksen coming on at halftime. And what do we think of this sort of halftime section?
I sort of, basically, I think that the issue with our performance in this game was almost entirely tactical, was that we set up completely the wrong way, that Lampard was completely prepared to deal with our long ball strategy, and instead the blame is placed on mentality once again. And I guess there's an extent to which, like, you can't as the manager, like, sheepishly at halftime be like, oh, sorry, guys, got that one wrong. It's all right, though. No, I know how we're going to do the second half.
I think you can.
You think you can?
Yeah.
Do you get the respect from your players? Do they not then go, but what if this is also even worse than your first idea? I don't know.
I think you sell it like, okay, they've done something we weren't expecting here, so here's what we're going to do. And you just go back, you just try something new and do it that way. I don't think you have to necessarily accept that it was your own error. I mean, this, we don't know if that, this could have all happened and we just haven't seen it. It's just the very, the narrative is so heavy on this kind of mentality, and Jose is a winner, and therefore we're going to show him being a winner in the dressing room at all times. And actually, we lose this game. There's no winning mentality here.
But I think the game, the Willian goal comes about because Aurier does a ridiculous decision to head the ball out for a corner, and then they do a short, and then he's still distracted with the people complaining. They pull a short corner and Willian whacks it in. And then the second goal is Gazzaniga's mistake. So I think, as much as I agree with you that this whole winner thing is nonsense, I do think he has a point here in terms of mentality and allowing the pressure to get to them. They make two stupid errors, which gives Chelsea the advantage. And then, of course, we're unable to impose our game on Chelsea because they've been smarter than us. But I still think a lot of it does come down to stupidity in our own brains.
Is that not concentration rather than mentality, though?
I guess so. But I think it's part and parcel, no?
Perhaps. Nathan?
I just feel like I get the impression that this is the way that every manager is, that almost no one would ever go in and say, OK, the issue is entirely tactical. You know, that he wouldn't, or that any manager wouldn't, you know, bash the players. I just get the impression that the life of a football player is to forever be blamed for everything that could possibly go wrong, and that people love to say, you know, oh, footballers, they have it so easy, they're paid huge amounts of money, they kick a ball, but it must be like mentally challenging to just get so much shit all the time, and then when things are going well, it's the manager, you know, that kind of thing.
You're so right, and it is such a sort of toxic atmosphere so much of the time. The emotional pressure, no wonder careers are increasingly short. It's the emotional pressure is so intense, and this is definitely something we've seen in this episode, the pure intensity pre and post match. It's difficult. I don't know. I don't want to go too hard on Mourinho here because, again, like, we don't see the stuff we're not shown, so it's very difficult to make a clear judgment either way on how he handled this at half time. And Bardi is right that there are some individual mistakes rather than it all necessarily being tactical. What certainly doesn't help is that the second half starts and we see, not, I can't remember the timing of it, but Son kicking out at
58 minutes or so.
I thought it was quite early on in the half. I remember us certainly not having 11 men on the pitch for much of that half. So it's what follows which is fascinating. Son walking into the tunnel saying, how is that a red? Tell me, please, how is that a red? It shouldn't be a red, it should be yellow. Then he's in the dressing room. He's nearly in tears. He's sat down. He's absolutely devastated. And what we get is this decision for the director to focus on Son sat there for such a long time that I actually timed it because it was so long. So I went back. It was 45 seconds of Son being sat in his chair looking sad, which it gives you a lot of feelings. Nathan, how did you feel watching Son wanting to cry?
Yeah, it was pretty tough, you know. I remember at the time, this was, as Buddy alluded to earlier, not his first incident of this nature. Despite, as we've already said, being a really, really sweet, charming, humble guy, he has this side of him where, like, if he's being physically bullied, he will respond if he's really, really pushed. And I remember being at the time being really annoyed with him because it's like, okay, you've had two passes on this or whatever, three passes on this. Now it's time you take responsibility and you look at what you're doing. Because you, not that I think that we were going to come back into that game, but you at least potentially cost us, you know, a comeback there. But then to see him for that 45-second shot, it was really tough. I really, really felt for him. You can tell how much he feels it and how hard it is for him to process being the bad guy in any kind of situation, because that's just not a role he's comfortable in at all.
But process it he does, and his reflections couldn't have been better. He handles it so well that the next sort of sound bites from Son are him saying, "It was definitely, definitely my mistake. I felt so bad." He says, "I'm 27, I shouldn't have done this kind of thing." And you just think, yeah, you know, that is how you handle it. You own your mistake and you learn from it and you grow. What did you think, Bardi?
Yeah, and you forget that he's 27. When I was 27, I remember throwing up on a brand new pair of trainers, and it's just like, there's the kind of levels to it. And he's 27 years old, this person that we all look to, and he's like an inspirational figure at Tottenham, and he made a mistake, and that whole 45 seconds looking at him, it was a great bit of drama, because you see the repercussions of his action, and that people could shout and complain as much as they want at him, but it's the personal reflection that is the real hard thing that we have to watch. And you know, it's sad, but he hasn't done it since, which is good. So maybe he has learned from it this time.
So the players then all filter back into the changing room, and it's incredibly quiet. No one's really saying anything. And Mourinho comes in from what seems like a side door, and he's sort of trying to lift them. He doesn't convince me that he's really trying to lift them, if that makes sense. It feels like a little bit of a token gesture. But equally, what's he going to do in that situation? I mean, he's in an absolutely impossible situation there, I think. It's a really difficult defeat to take. They've just lost against their big rivals in the league, and one of their favourite teammates has made an error which has really upset everyone. And he's got an impossible task, essentially. So what he does is tries to cajole them and tell them how many points they've made up in this space of time. What did you think of that, Nathan, in terms of his motivational technique?
Yeah, I mean, his point about, like, you know, we've got another game coming up, go get out, get in the shower, go home, that sort of thing, like, okay, fair enough. But then the sort of going around each player individually to say come on to them is and put a hand, and then he's like really tentative with the physical contact element. Yeah. And it was just like a bit naff, but you know.
Yeah, and it ends with him saying, "Come on, kid," to Dele. They're the final words, and then there's a final shot on Son looking solemn once again. And that is the end of episode 3 of All of Nothing, All or Nothing. What did we learn? Bardi, what did you learn from the episode?
I know you're a bit down on the episode, but I thought it was good to get a little bit of insight into how contract negotiations work and what happens when you have a group of players who have been so key to your club and how you've played leaving and how you kind of start progressing without them. So I thought that was a nice little bit of insight, and the kind of clearing up the whole Eriksen down in tools thing, and that he doesn't want to play for us, he doesn't want to be there, and he's upset in the dressing room, and clearly from what we've seen he wasn't, was a good bit of insight. So I think it was a useful episode in that sense, and as well the Son reflection as well. So I think it was a much better episode than you think, and always episode 3 is always the tricky one in any kind of TV season.
Yeah, I mean, when I watched this episode, I thought it was the weakest of the three, but now we've spoken about it, you're right. There's a lot there, and there's a lot of interesting stuff there. And you're also right about the contract situations. And what we see is three very different situations. You've got one player who signs ultimately, one player who wants to leave the club, and one player who the club wants to leave. So you've got three different scenarios panning out. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more from the agent perspective and how the negotiations happen. That was something that was missing, probably for obvious reasons. It's kind of sensitive, personal information being discussed. So I don't know if there would have been issues around that. So that was a bit of a pity, but you know, there was some good stuff there. And I enjoyed all of the characters who were featured in this, from Vertonghen and Alderweireld to Eriksen to Son. I thought each of them had something interesting to bring to the story. How about you, Nathan?
Yeah, no, I think between the two of you, you've definitely arrived at the truth there. This wasn't the entertaining episode. This wasn't the good narrative clarity of message episode. But this is what is actually probably more interesting to us, which is like the gory details, the insight, and a bit of screen time for some process and for some of the more quieter characters. So yeah, I like this one for that reason.
I must say, I felt it was really lacking some Jason Burt in this episode. I needed more Jason Burt to really hammer it home. But other than that, solid enough. Do either of you feel differently about Tottenham Hotspur after watching this episode?
No. I would like to have... I really wish that we could go back and have them discuss at half-time or at full-time, dealing with Adama Traore, how to deal with the Adama problem. That would have been great to find out.
What you really needed was Daniel Levy at the breakfast table with Jose Mourinho saying, Jose, how are you going to deal with Adama Traore?
God, that Adama, he's really far. I imagine it must be really difficult to prepare for a player like that. I wonder how, have you ever prepared?
is there a player in the squad maybe who matches up to him physically? I can't think of any, but maybe you've got some ideas that might find a solution to this problem. Yeah, that's what we lacked. That is definitely what we lacked. I mean, no, you're right, Bardi, to put this is actually, when you stand back and look at this episode as a whole, it's actually really intriguing. There's a lot there that actually gives us insight into what happens at the club. It would have been lovely to have had that insight at the time, right? It's a shame that we're getting it in retrospect, but such is football. Buddy, were you going to say something else then?
Oh, no. It's okay. I thought I was, but then you cut it really well, and I thought that was a good ending.
Okay, right. I'll just add on one extra thing, if that's okay. So that is the end of the first package of All or Nothing episodes. So the next slot drop on the 7th of September, and we'll be back soon after that to deliver our breakdowns of those three episodes.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud E. Lindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.